everyone. This is Luke Jean-Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Mike DiCiocio. He is the founder and president of Social Chameleon and a fellow podcaster with the show that goes by the name of Mic'd Up. And at Social Chameleon, he helps entrepreneurs, businesses, and brands with done-for-you podcasting services and distributions, which is amazing. And with his show Mic'd Up, it serves as a platform for guests to share their experiences and help to inspire the audience to be brave and bold in pursuit of their dreams. And so it's an amazing show with amazing guests. Definitely everyone should check it out. And Mike is someone who has a bachelor's from SUNY Buffalo in media production. He was born and raised in Buffalo. He's a fan of the Buffalo Bills and the New York Yankees. And he's also a member of the Bills Mafia, very notorious group. So I guess he could talk to us a little bit about that. So we're very fortunate to have Mike here with us as a guest. He's a very busy man, and he was able to carve out some time in his packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So we were very fortunate and blessed. So I guess to start off, Mike, can you talk to us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Absolutely. Before I do that, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. And anyone tuning in, thank you guys for taking the time to listen to the two of us today. And Luke's someone who I connected with on LinkedIn, and I just want to encourage anybody to use that as a platform to not only get more connections, but to actually connect with people, make real conversations and real friendships. And I didn't know what it would turn into when I met Luke and just shot him a quick note. And he's been amazing with just sending me quality connections and being real about it. We've had a couple personal conversations previous to this that I'm grateful for. So I just want to say a big thank you to you before we get started.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. So to answer your question, how did it all turn into how where we're at today with Social Chameleon? I mean, that right there, I think that could take up the next 45 minutes. So I'll try to, for the sake of brevity, I'll try to summarize it. But really, my passions as a youngster was always in, before we called it creating content, it really was that. I used to run around with mom and dad's video camera when I was like 8 years old, right? I'm a late 80s child, early 90s, kind of the earliest I remember, and just loved to create. My brother and I, I'm the youngest of three, so he was the middle child. He and I would just like write screenplays when we're 8 years old, you know? We would reenact our favorite movies, our favorite comedies. We would design the cover. We would design the cover of like a VHS tape and learned how, literally our first nonlinear editing system was two VCRs connected to one another. You press play on one and record on the other. And then you would just literally pause the one that was recording. And that's how we learned how to create our own video content. I pursued it throughout school. Also, as a musician, I played the drums since about 11 years old. I was in bands hanging out with like my friends, starting a garage band to performing in the school bands, everything from marching band, jazz band, wind ensemble. If they said you can stand in the back of orchestra and strike the triangle because that's a percussive instrument, I'd say sign me up for it. I just wanted to make music. And my first gig out was on my 18th birthday, and I played out with a couple different bands, and we were very talented and had some cool opportunities in Buffalo. As you mentioned, that's where I'm from. We got a great group of people here. Our community is very passionate, and we love our sports teams. You mentioned that. So I'm just giving you a little background on who I am before I share the kind of the business side of myself. And yeah, when you're born and raised in Buffalo, you better believe that you're a member of Bill's Mafia. That's a newer term. It actually came out in 20. Well, it's not that new anymore. It's 2009, I want to say, is when that thing was born from a friend of mine. It was either 09 or 11. It's all blurry to me now. But a friend of mine who I later met, I didn't even know him at this point in time, but there's a player on the Bills, Stevie Johnson, who's our wide receiver. And it was like the last play of the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just going to share how the name Bills Mafia came about because you were asking me off camera. Stevie drops the ball in the end zone, and we would have won the game. I don't know what our playoff implications were that year, but I don't think the team was doing too hot. Basically, catching it and not catching it had more to do with our draft pick the next year than it did, I think, with our playoff hopes. But when he drops it, he goes in the locker room and he tweets, "God, why would you do me like that?" And people got on him. They're like, "Why would you blame God? The ball was in your hands. You dropped it, right?" So he deleted it. And then the next day on Monday, came out and, like, apologized to the media and just said, "Look, I was heated. I said what I said, and I realized it's not right. I deleted it. Let's move on." Like, the next day on Twitter, Adam Schefter, who football fans know his name, sports fans will probably recognize his name. He's a reporter for ESPN, and he's always known for, like, breaking contract extensions or news or trades or whatever about the NFL. And, like, the next day he retweeted a story or tried to break news on the fact that Stevie tweeted, "God, why would you do me like that?" Whatever the tweet was. And Bills fans were like, "Are you kidding me? Like, he already apologized about it. This is old news." And so they started kind of joking around, and they'd be like, "Oh, dinosaurs are extinct. Hashtag Schefter breaking news." Or, "Abe Lincoln was shot. Hashtag Schefter breaking news." And he started to get mad, and he started blocking a bunch of Bills fans. And people were laughing. They're like, "Oh, what are we, the bad guys?" So one fan just randomly said, like, "What are we, the Bills Mafia?" Like, the joke. And several months, I guess, went off the clock. And a Bills player fan account. We had a player at the time. His name was Nick Burnett, number 50. Came over from Green Bay. I think he played a year or two with Buffalo. He had a, like, long Maine-type hair, like mangy Maine. Kind of, it looked like a lion. So his nickname was Mufasa, right? Mm. Lion King. And so there was a Twitter account, Mufasa's Hair. So, you know, we don't think it was actually him, obviously, but it had quite a following. It was actually a big account at the time. And because that retweeted the whole Bills Mafia deal, or he used that hashtag, that's when it really took off. So a bunch of fans and then even players started to see it. And it was really like a very small click kind of, "Hey, this is fun. We're called the Bills Mafia." And then my friend Del Reed, who I was talking about, him and his three friends were the ones who were having that fun with Adam Schefter and came up with the idea of Bills Mafia. They were the ones who started to think, like, "Oh, instead of fan base, we'll be called fam base, F-A-M base." And so they start making T-shirts. It's actually a really cool story. They decided to make T-shirts and donate 100% of the proceeds to a cancer research center here in Buffalo called Roswell. It's where my friend Dell was working at the time. And they would make T-shirts and sell them, like, in the Bills parking lot, and 100% went to charity. And they did that, and they would literally sell out of all their T-shirts before every game. It was just blowing up. And someone was like, "Well, how are we actually, like, a T-shirt company now? What's going on?" And someone said, "Well, how long does it take us to come up with the idea, get it printed?" And they had a bunch of artist friends that were helping them, like, design the T-shirts or working with another friend for printing the T-shirts. And so they were kind of working out how often they could release a new design. And someone said, "Well, like, from start to finish, it takes us about 2 weeks." So another person in the room said, "Well, that's like 26 shirts a year." And that's how the name of their company came about. They're called 26 Shirts. So every 2 weeks, new design. Typically, it's Buffalo Bills or Sabres themed. They actually branched out to other cities. I believe Pittsburgh and Chicago now are up and running. And instead of doing 100% proceeds to charity, obviously, you don't really have a business model at that point. It's all going to charity. They decided to give a large portion of the sale to not only one charity like Roswell, but to different charities. Every 2 weeks, you're giving to a different family or a child in need or an organization in need. And it's just a really, really great concept that came from a bunch of Bills fans who are just having some fun with Adam Schefter. And if Stevie doesn't drop the ball, this whole thing doesn't come about. Isn't that incredible? So, yeah, Bills Mafia would never exist if that play didn't happen. So I'm sure Stevie knows it and reflects on it. It's pretty funny. But, it's a really cool thing. And I just want to give a shout-out to Del Reed in 26 Shirts. He was actually a guest on Mic'd Up. Episode number 3, if you guys want to check out the full interview with him. Yeah, he became a friend, and The Bills, for many, many years, about 25 years, we were pretty horrible, to be honest. Mm-hmm. We had great runs in the early 90s. Teams were in the Super Bowl 4 years in a row. Jim Kelly retired in 96, and then they kind of went downhill from there. We had, you know, quarterback purgatory, we call it, where just guys come in for a year or two and stink, and they'd get shipped off, and we would get new guys, draft picks. Some people were off the street. We just had everybody in between. And finally, Josh Allen and the team have turned it around the last few years. Awesome coaching with Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, and they got us in the AFC Championship, and we're a contender now. And so I just want to give a shout-out to all the Bills fans listening, because we're a tight-knit group, but we definitely appreciate a good team in town because we haven't had one for a really long time. So that's the Bills Mafia story.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's
it
incredible.
I just want to say, Luke, the reason I went that deep into that tangent is because a lot of people see Bills Mafia and they don't know maybe the origins of it. Many people don't. And we do have some crazy fans here, and I love them, but some people literally like jump off tables on fire and smash themselves through it, and that's their celebration of having fun, and that gets associated with Bills Mafia. So people are entitled to whatever the heck they want in the parking lot. I don't like to see people getting hurt. That part of it I'm not cool with. But, like, yeah, go have your fun, whatever. I don't necessarily like to do that or think that that's for me, but I encourage people to go to a game and have fun. But the problem I have with it is national media picks up Bills Mafia. They see the table jumping, and then all of a sudden that's what they're saying. Like, when they think of Bills Mafia, they think of that. But they're not thinking about the fans that are raising. They raised over $1 million for charities in a few years. That's really what Bills Mafia is. It's our heart. And I'll share one more story about Bills Mafia. When Andy Dalton threw a pass to Tyler Boyd a couple years ago, he caught the pass against the Ravens, and it was when Andy Dalton was with the Bengals. The Bengals beat the Ravens. It was week 17. The Bills had just beat the Dolphins, so I think they were 10-6, and they needed – it was maybe 9-7. They needed the Bengals to beat the Ravens, because if the Ravens won, they would have won the tiebreaker against the Bills and took that wild card spot. So the fact that Andy Dalton – throws that pass and they beat the Ravens, the Bills locker room erupted. And there's a really cool documentary that like shows all the players watching it. And it was 17 years. The 17 year playoff drought was broken because of that pass by Dalton. So Bills fans are crazy. We realized that he had an organization and he had a foundation, right, where he was raising money. And Bills fans, because of that, as a thank you, raised over $400,000 for him in, like, 2 days or something crazy.
Wow.
And so that's the kind of level of appreciation and craziness that happens in Buffalo. So I just want to give the respect where it's given. So I share a little bit about me. I love creating content. I love music and also a huge sports fan. When I got into my early 20s is really when things started to turn more into the business side of development. And I was always interested in getting into sales. Wasn't sure if I'd be exceptional at it or if something I'd be passionate about or if that was really, the vision I wanted to take with my story. Got into working at a music store, right, and did that a little bit. It wasn't anything that was going to be bringing home a lot of bacon, but it was keeping me afloat for a while. And then I got really serious with my girlfriend. This was back in 2008, so I feel like, you know, an old man telling the story now. But, yeah, we ended up getting serious. We got married in 2011. Beautiful daughter was born in 2015. I had kind of the American dream coming to life for me. And as I progressed in sales, I went from that music store to working for Sleep Number, which is a great organization. They sell Sleep Number beds. Speaking of the NFL, they're now a big partner of the NFL, which, funny enough, was something I was telling them they should have done 10 years ago, but now they just started doing it 2 years ago. So I take a little bit of credit that I saw that vision coming years ago. But so Sleep Number beds were an opportunity. That company, I was a sales rep for a couple of years. I got into store management, which I learned how to manage a sales team and, you know, do expenses and budgeting and you know, running schedules and being a great salesperson on top of it all. And great experience for myself. I did really well. I went President's Circle the first year with the company. The only reason I still share that story is it just goes to show that that was the year that I was bit by the sales bug. That was 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I got married that same year, and things were really looking up. And I had to ask myself, like, okay, do I go back and, like, pursue music at this point? Or do I do geography? I just graduated from Buffalo State College with a Bachelor of Arts. You know, what do I do with this? And there weren't a ton of opportunities locally. And the thing that was going really well was sales. And I realized the reason that I loved it was, A, when you do good, when you're great at something, you love it more. Let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
If you're terrible at dance and you're going to dance lessons and you hate it because you're not good at it and you're having fun, you're not going to want to do it very long. So this mm-hmm. was something that I enjoyed and I felt that was really good. And the reason I think I excelled, thinking on a few reasons, was the passion behind it. I absolutely cared about helping people out. We had a great product, so I believed in it. And anyone who's listening to this has a product or service they sell, or they're an entrepreneur, they know that when you believe in something, you'll tell anyone about it confidently and understand that, it doesn't feel like you're selling it. You're helping a friend out. You know, you're helping a new person, a connection you just made. You want to make them better than you found them. So your product and service can do that. Of course, you're going to bring it up. And then I learned how to be a great presenter. I would have, really strong skills when someone came in and I was working with them in the store, how to be a better listener and actually understand their needs and then show them the right products based on the conversation and not just sell them what I was trying to sell, but actually sell them what was the right solution. People appreciated that. And then I was a strong closer because I believed in the product the same way that if I had to cure for cancer and someone had cancer and I'm talking to that person, of course, I'm going to be passionate about making sure they get it no matter what however we work it out. So that's how that all came about. Got recruited thanks to LinkedIn, putting my resume out there and all my awards and stuff. Ended up getting me an opportunity with Liberty Mutual. I sold insurance for about 4 years. Auto, home, and life was not something I wanted to do for 30 years, but it was a great opportunity to learn how to network and learn and get uncomfortable. You know what? I never thought of it this way, but I got really uncomfortable at that position because I was selling things I didn't know a lot about. So I had to do a lot of product knowledge. They shipped me out for a couple of weeks down in Florida, which is a great escape down in December of like, when was this, like 2012 or whenever. Uh-huh. And just got a nice little getaway, right? And I got my license, came back to Buffalo, and just really talked to everybody I could about protecting their family, protecting their assets, protecting, their home, their cars, all the goodies, right?
Uh-huh.
Most importantly, their family. And I did that for like 3.5 years, but that was a really good business lesson. Anyone who wants to really have like a wake-up call, like try to do door-to-door and phone sales, like picking up the phone. I had to literally, I wasn't the smartest guy in the office, and I was one of the top producers, especially in my like class of, as a youngster. The guys who were doing extremely well had 15-plus years of experience. And I was like, I had like 15 months of experience, So my best skill was to just not be afraid to connect with people. So I would just hammer the phones and go to networking events. And that was really my way to be successful. And I did pretty well, for I feel like a couple of years in the business there. I was proud of what I did. But again, I knew that the reason I wanted to move on in anything in life is because I wasn't fulfilled. And I can tell you, like, if you are doing it for other reasons, and even if you're making money doing it, eventually that fulfillment factor dies off, which is why you see musicians or actors or actresses or celebrities or any, athletes, if they're in a disgruntled situation with a team that doesn't believe in them or they're trying to get traded or whatever, and their love for the game starts to fall apart, like Deshaun Watson last year, like where he's just getting dragged around by the Texans. I know he had his own personal off-field stuff, but I'm just saying, like, as far as his performance versus how he got treated by that team, it just doesn't make sense. And your fulfillment starts to fall apart, and you start to think about life after the current situation. And that what happened to me when I was at Sleep Number and Liberty Mutual. I was just thinking about life after already. And then that's a really bad place to be is Marv Levy, our old Buffalo Bills coach, has a great quote, and it says, once you think about quitting, you have already quit. It's true. Think about a relationship. If you're like, I don't know, it's the one. If you're questioning it, you're thinking about maybe the next one, then you're already done. Like, you basically gave up on the current situation. So I kind of found that as a problem, but I realized the reason I was doing that was because I wasn't fulfilled. So then in 2017, this kind of answers the question finally, is I ended up getting divorced in 2017. I would say I wasn't fulfilled in marriage either at that point. We just saw things two different ways. And, you know, there's some things that I wasn't proud of, but I ended up causing the marriage to kind of come crumbling down. But at the end of the day, I realized, and I was recently interviewed on a show where I explained the whole story. So if you guys want to know the story about my divorce, it's actually, I open up about it on the Amicable Divorce podcast with Judy. She's awesome, and I share the story. So I'll save it for a table. You guys can go check that out. But what I do after that all happens is I realize, you know what, who am I? Like, I got to get real with myself here, right? Because a lot of the things I was doing was for the marriage or for my family, for my daughter. And I started to forget about, like, that self-love and care piece of it. And so I asked myself in 2017, why was I doing anything I was doing? Most of the answers had nothing to do with myself, right? So I decided to walk away. I walked away from corporate America in that year and started my own company, and I called it Social Chameleon. The reason I came up with the name is because when people would ask me how I was ever successful in business or what were some of my traits or things that helped me be successful, one of the things that always came back to me was I felt I was a chameleon in a good way, not to just blend in, but the fact that I can learn, adapt, and grow based on who's in front of me. So, like, if an older couple came in or I was selling them insurance, for example, I would talk to them in a way that I was still being genuinely me, but I was communicating in a way that would also resonate with them. You know?
Right.
I wasn't, whatever that looks like, everybody's different. So I'd assess the person I'm talking to and basically just try to explain it the best way for it to make sense to them. I have old school Italian parents that I grew up in that environment. My grandparents speak broken English or spoke broken English. They've all passed on now. But, you know, so I kind of grew up in an environment where if I had to explain things to my grandparents, I learned the skill of doing it differently than I would talk to my parents and then differently than how I talk to my school friends. Mm. And I think that kind of helped me understand that. In all three situations, I was always Mike, but I was a different version of me to be able to connect with the audience. And so that's really what your prospect is your audience. So that's kind of what I mean when I say chameleon, is that when I'd work with different clients or prospects, I would work with them in a way that I felt fit the scenario. And I think they connected with me because of that. So I thought, okay, cool. If I'm going to create a business name, I want to be chameleon, something related to that. Then I looked up, you know, that was overused, just the word by itself. There are many businesses in different fields with that. So then I figured out that social chameleon is actually a thing. It's someone who goes into a social environment like a networking event and does, like I just said, they adapt based on who they're talking to. I guess there's a negative way of looking at that where, you know, I guess the word social chameleon could be thought to be negative because then it's not being real. But I want people to know that the way I'm using it and the way that it's meant to be used is a positive thing, and that it's not a one solution, one size fits all. Like, when you work with us, we figure out who you are, what your needs are, and how we can help you out. And that's really what's the most transparent. I think it would be bad if you're just exactly the same for everyone and you don't tailor it at all to their unique situation. So the company that I launched, Social Chameleon, was originally a digital media and marketing company. We did everything from web design, Facebook, Instagram. We'd run social media ads, the account management side of it. We would do print ads. We would do, you name it, anything marketing related.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, web design, but also getting people on the first page of Google. So we'd do SEO and SEM, all kinds of stuff. And I'll kind of transition with this is, the biggest mistake I made was I was trying to do too much, right? I was trying to water the forest. I want you to picture yourself with a, you know, with a hose trying to water the forest. Nearly impossible. And when things actually grow, a tree could pop up and you go, how the hell did that get there? I don't remember that there yesterday. Did I do that? Or is that just there? And then also weeds grow. And you're like, shit, I don't know how that got there. And were they there before I got here? Whatever. So it's hard to monitor, right, when you're trying to do all this stuff. And especially the team at that point was me, myself, and I. I started to bring on some freelancers early on and get people around me that were super talented. Another transparent mistake I made is I was, you know, not paying myself enough. So I get these great people to work on the team, and then I was giving myself, like, you know, the crumbs. 5-10% if I was lucky after all the hours I put into it. So I was reading books and watching interviews and watching a lot of sales content, business content to learn how to better run my business. And it took the first couple of years to kind of figure it out. The best thing I did was I decided to pick an avenue that I wanted to be my 10x10 piece of land for me to water, that you could then see the results of what you're doing. You can monitor the weeds when they get there. It's a lot easier to remove because you see them in the moment or if the next day, so you know when they're there and how long they've been there, because you can easily monitor it.
Mm.
And how I determined what my 10x10 would be is back in 2019, I had a surrender moment, kind of talking to God and the universe, and I was saying, like, okay, this is what I'm doing. I have this company. This is how I've gotten here through my story that I shared some of it with you guys just in the last few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, put me in position to be the best version of myself so I can actually serve the world. That's literally what I was saying. Like, what am I supposed to be doing to serve? All this stuff, I don't know if it's actually what I'm supposed to be doing or not. Can you give me some kind of sign? So I decided that the tug at my heart at that point was to launch Mic'd Up, the podcast. Mm-hmm. Teased a little bit earlier, and it was the best decision I made because not only do I love it, and it was something that I knew I would do whether it monetized or not, it was a passion project for me, but also I was called to do it. So my why and my purpose behind it was really strong, so I knew I wouldn't give up on it, and I've been doing it for 84 weeks, and every week I launch a new episode. And so when I did that, one of my clients I was doing a video for, they caught wind of it through my email, and they were like, hey, we're actually talking about doing podcasting, and you can help us get started. And the conversation led me into actually launching and managing their show for them, doing all the editing and figuring it all out. And that ended up being a way for me to pivot into podcasting. And I kind of started to think, we're going to add this to the existing line of services. But I started to get smarter through, again, just the books I was reading and the interviews, the content I was putting into myself, realized I need to really narrow this forest down. And what do you want to be great at? And I decided I want to be great at podcasting. So then once that decision was made, the pandemic hit. And the pandemic basically had everybody stutter stepping, right? And I said, okay, this is my opportunity to reinvent the company. We're going to come out, we're going to redo our website, we're going to redo our social, and we're coming out as Social Chameleon Podcasting Done For You. We had that one up and running client already, and it literally from that point got laser focused and crystal clear on what we were doing. And all of a sudden that 10x10 land started to prosper, and trees were coming up, and and every day I would talk to it like the garden, like, hey man, come on now, you know, you can do it. And believe it or not, like, as horrible as 2020 was, and I lost two close family members, my grandmother and my father both passed away in 2020 with COVID.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
Thank you, man. And as horrible as it was, and the fact is I'm still haven't fully dealt with that internally, but I still had to run the business, and I enjoyed doing it no matter what happened. And I was able to really 10x my business during the pandemic because I was getting more laser focused. And the other benefit was that everything I was doing was remote. So I literally could keep running the show. I didn't have to, like, my video shoots and stuff were all canceled because of COVID. But my podcasting wasn't canceled because people would do their interviews remotely and they would send me the files on Dropbox or wherever they wanted to place them. And I started to create systems behind the scenes to make it easier for my clients, which is a benefit of working with us. Everything's mapped out for you. You literally press record, do your show, ship it to us, and we do the rest.
Wow.
That leads us to this interview. I mean, it's been fantastic since I made that decision.
That's amazing. And thank you so much for sharing your incredible life story. Very appreciative of it. I don't care how long it was. It was great. And thank you for
going. You asked me this, the first question, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it was
no
like,
worries.
Tell me how you got to where you're at today. It's like, holy smokes, like, that's the whole show. So I apologize if that was a lot of rambling.
No worries.
I feel like it answered your question, right?
Yes, you did, actually. And you answered some other questions I was going to give you, so not a big deal. So I'm glad you went into detail. And you know, there's a lot I could take from it and learn from. You talked about the pandemic shifting and whatnot, pivoting, and I think there's a lot to learn from that. And you talked about finding your purpose and being fulfilled. And I took a lot from that as well. You know, Mark Twain once said that you have two birthdays in your life, the day you were born and the day you figure out why. You know,
you know both your birthdays,
and it's interesting. It goes back to what you were doing as a child, right? You were working with VHS. A lot of young people don't know what VHS is because it's like a very old technology. Sorry, it's hard for me to explain it to them. But so you were working with VHS. You were also a musician, so you had this kind of creativity to you. Mm-hmm. Artistry, which is amazing and incredible. And so, but you found out what you wanted to do. You wanted to go into podcasting, you wanted to be a podcaster. And it's funny, when you were young, there's no way you could have figured that out because podcasting actually didn't exist back in the 80s.
Correct. Yeah.
So you could have said, I want to be a podcaster when I grow up. So obviously with technology, It offers these opportunities, which is amazing, and it helps us out, obviously, during the pandemic and whatnot, and so that's incredible and whatnot. So, and it's interesting how you left the corporate America to become an entrepreneur. That stuck out to me because it's interesting because so many people are fearful of doing that, making that leap, because so many people are working a job and they're not happy, they're not fulfilled, as you mentioned. But they're scared to kind of make that jump to start a business on their own. But you did that, and that people like that always impress me. Yeah.
You know, it scares me more than launching on business and not knowing what could happen. The scarier thought to me is that you have an opportunity to live on this planet, beautiful planet Earth, depending on what your culture is, not everybody on this planet has freedom, and I understand that. But if you're in our country, USA, you pretty much can wake up in the morning and can decide what you're going to do with yourself. And the scarier thing to me is that people have that opportunity, privilege, and freedom, and they just screw it away. They just throw it away. Mm-hmm. And that to me is scary, like to say, like, what could you have? I don't want people to be on their deathbed going, what could have happened or what could have I done? I want you to think about how you can make this place better because of your existence. So, you know, it doesn't, not everybody's story is going to have, their legacy is going to be as large or whatever, but you should be focusing on like what you can leave behind as far as not only in your own family life, your children, but people that don't even know you can be influenced. Like, I hope someone's listening to this show right now and they're getting encouraged to go and do something that they are fulfilled in doing because that's their calling. And the rest of the world's better off if you're actually doing what you're called to do instead of something you hate, because then you're not really vibrating and giving back. You're just kind of miserable and closed. And it's almost like a maze where there's a closed end that you cannot go that way. And so, you know, by doing something you hate, you kind of become a closed off maze opposed to a maze that has a bunch of open areas that you can be pushing things out. And that's what I love doing in the show, is it's pushing all these like open avenues out to help other people and encourage them. And that's, like I said, to be brave and bold in pursuit of your dreams. Like, everybody, God willing, and if you have your health and everything, that you can do it. then if you're not, I think that that's a damn shame. I mean, you know, not to be too harsh about it, but I think we have to be, because who wants to just be average? Like, we're not here to just be another 9-to-5 cog in the wheel. That's not what the world needs. We need more people that are going to go out, and through your uniqueness, everyone has their own DNA. No two people are alike, and go be you. We don't need the best. We don't need another Oprah. We don't need another, you know, Steve Jobs. We need another you. We need another Luke or different version of Mike, whatever. So that's what I would say. Funny reflection too is, you know, yeah, I told my story and I didn't mention much about like podcasting or radio. And as you said, podcasting didn't exist, which is true. But I did actually have like a little tape player where I used to record stuff off the radio and be like the MC and kind of pretend I had my own radio show, which was kind of funny. But I never had a real interest in getting into radio. I think because I felt like that was kind of closed off, where I would have to be like talking about the top hits of either music or doing kind of what like the corporation would want to talk about or whatever. So I never really had an interest in getting in the radio, because I didn't see it as a platform for me to do part of what I wanted to do. And what podcasting is great is that I was able to create my own show. I'm the producer of my own show. The content creativity is my own. And then the other thing I love is it can be on any time. It's on demand. People play it when they want. I can run a commercial or no commercials. They can listen to it on their own personal devices. It's not like you have to be in your car listening to 550 radio at 6 o'clock in the morning to hear my show. People can listen to it anytime and anywhere in the world. So that got my interest. That's why I love podcasting. You can choose to do positive things with it. And I just think radio had some potential, but it was limited. And this is like taking the concept of radio and putting it on like, you know, massive, massive steroids in a good way. I know that's, you know, that always draws negative attention. But my point is like creating a super version of it, you know.
Absolutely. And you're totally right. Obviously, podcasting, there's so many different advantages with it. Podcasting, my understanding, is going to eclipse radio if it hasn't already. And so radio's sort of been kind of in big trouble. I suppose there will always be a place for radio, but podcasting is just kind of growing and blowing up at the moment. And so you're definitely riding the wave at being in the podcast arena and whatnot. And it's interesting. I could feel the passion in your voice. And I love speaking with people who are passionate because it's infectious, it's contagious, and you're totally right. There was a book written about older people who were dying, who were living in a hospice, and they were surveyed, and they found one of their biggest regrets, by the way, was that they didn't live the life that they wanted to live. They lived the life that other people wanted them to live. And you kind of related to that. I mean, with your own personal story, you weren't living the life you wanted. So I think you're definitely on the right path, absolutely. And so I think it's something that a lot of people need to understand. Unfortunately, they don't have to be another cog, like you mentioned. They can be their unique, different type of screw or tool or instrument or whatnot. And so that's, I think, very important advice. You also mentioned that when you started your firm, you obviously had some hiccups and whatnot. You were kind of doing everything. You mentioned web design and some other stuff. But you know, it's interesting, but then you focus on that one or you know, one or two key things, I guess, you know, with podcasting and whatnot, and the pandemic also kind of helped shift things, of course, because there's a saying that the riches are in the niches, so to speak. You've probably heard it before.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. It's spot on.
It sounds corny, but It definitely, there is some truth to that. It's something a lot of people who are in business, who are entrepreneurs, need to understand, focusing on just that one segment, not trying to be everything to everyone and whatnot, although obviously that's very tempting. Definitely I think that's great, amazing advice and whatnot. And it's interesting, you took a lot of the skills you learned when you were an employee to doing what you're involving that with what you're doing now. Particularly, you said you learned a lot about sales. You got that sales bug that kind of bit you. So, and then obviously you're always selling, which is interesting. We're all kind of salespeople in our own way. So it's great that you learned a lot about sales.
And you mentioned that you're also a good listener, good presenter, good closer. Listening skills are so critical now. It's not as easy to listen as people think. So I think that's an amazing skill to have. And it's interesting, you talked about your love for the Buffalo Bills and whatnot. I'm curious, have you ever personally met Jim Kelly? I was just wondering about this.
Yeah, I did. When I was a little kid, he did sign, he had a couple things signed. I believe it was a football, maybe a poster. Never got a chance to really chit-chat with him. But he is, he's a guy in the community that is well-loved. I know there was a time when his story was he didn't really want to come to Buffalo because at the time we didn't have a great team and there's not all that much sexy that you could want to come to Buffalo. There's no beaches here and stuff. I mean, there are, but not ocean beaches that are sought after. So, yeah, I didn't blame, looking back at it, you kind of go, wow, that's kind of the guy that didn't want to be here. But once he came here and he realized, what Buffalo is all about and the people, and he fell in love with it. You don't know what you don't know. So it took him actually experiencing playing for our team for him to love the atmosphere here. And so he's never left. Since he's played here, he retired. He's been in Western New York. He does football camps. His son Hunter passed away and he does, I believe it's Krabs disease that he had. And so he's a big, fundraiser for that. And just, he's a part of a lot of amazing things. He's been through a tough road. Jim has where, he's battled with mouth cancer, numerous surgeries and procedures. And, I haven't had the chance yet. And I think, at some point maybe I'll interview him. I have a couple connections. I think I can make it happen, but, absolutely. Jim Kelly is a great dude and well-loved.
Wow, that'd be amazing. I'm pretty sure you can definitely get him. I'll definitely be listening to that episode. I know it'll happen. So I
all right, now you gave me the challenge. You gave me the challenge. Yeah, why the hell not? I mean, look, his story tells exactly what other stories I tell on Mic'd Up are entrepreneurs, business people. I've had athletes on. I've had an Olympian on. I've had people who have incredible comeback stories. I think of Amberly Lago, who she's quote unquote an influencer now, but she's just a great person who was doing coaching and fitness and stuff. And she, fitness was her whole life. And she ended up riding her motorcycle and got hit by an SUV and was horrible injury, almost lost her life and was told that she has less than 1% chance to keep her leg and even walk again. And she refused to be told that she couldn't do anything. So she went through 34 surgeries. She was able to keep her leg. Today she walks, she jogs, she works out. You see her all the time on her Instagram working out. She's riding horseback. She's living her life, and she's coaching and influencing more people through her adversity. And that's the kind of stories I tell. And, Jim, now that I think, thinking about it, has the story of adversity with losing 4 Super Bowls and also with cancer and coming back and still being a positive-minded person. He lost his son. I think there's a lot we could learn from him, for sure. Kelly Tough, baby. That's what he's known for, is Kelly Tough.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And his story is actually incredible. I'm interested to know if he's written an autobiography. I'm sure he has. I'm going to have to look that up.
I read his book. He has a book called Playbook for Dads. But I know his daughter, Erin, she wrote Kelly Tough. And I haven't read that yet, but so I would, if you're interested in the family story and Jim's story about overcoming cancer, I would check out Erin Kelly's book, Kelly Tough. We don't have free PR. I'm telling everyone else. But that's the whole thing. I literally, when I meet people and hear different stories, I don't like to keep things in and just have it be who benefited from this, Mike. That's not exciting to me. If I hear or see something, I'm the same way with products. I got the latest, greatest phone, and I loved it for some reason that I felt it made it special compared to others. And you and I connected today, I probably would tell you, dude, I just got this cool phone. You got to check it out, because I feel better that, more than one person would benefit from something, So that's why I share these stories, because, I want to encourage people to go and check them out so they can learn more from that opportunity and not just the one conversation that you and I are having right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And just so you know, my cousin actually also went to attended SUNY Buffalo, graduated, told me it was a very fun place. It was kind of like a party school, a little bit here and there. And but a lot of people, when they think of Buffalo, they think it gets really cold or whatnot. I'm sure it does, but you know, you guys do definitely know how to have a good time based on what he told me. And so definitely I would love to visit Buffalo at some point. I'd love to.
Well, if you do, hit me up, man. We'll go out for wings, and, you know, that's kind of the stereotype as well. But, yeah, we've got great wings. We love our sports here. Yeah, it gets cold, but you know what? We still find different ways. That's probably why we're a drinking town with a sports problem. So the sports town with a drinking problem. So you get it. You're spot on with that. Just to be clear, though, there are two different schools. So I went to Buffalo State. There's also the University at Buffalo, which is, I'd say, between the two, like UB is a little bit more well-known because they have UB Bowls and the sports program and stuff.
Mm.
And but Buff State's a great school, too. It's just a little bit smaller and not maybe as well-known, I guess you could say. But around here, obviously, people know the difference between those. But if someone's listening, they're not from town, they might be like, I don't think did he go to UB? Like, no, I went to Buffalo State. So down the street
so it wasn't
from one another.
Okay.
It's still SUNY, yeah. It's Buffalo State College.
Okay. Interesting. And you also have Canisius, which is a Catholic college, right?
Canisius, yeah. That's all in the same neighborhood, yeah.
Okay, got it. Do they have like a tunnel? I'm guessing they have like a tunnel thing when it gets cold, or maybe I'm misunderstanding something.
Canisius, I think, may have it now.
Mm-hmm.
Buff State certainly didn't, because the 4 years I went there to get my bachelor's, everything was outside, and many times I'd be going like a half mile between one building to the next, so to the parking lot. But I think UB has tunnels. I don't know about Canisius. I'm pretty sure UB does now, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So I'm curious. Now, obviously, I was going to talk to you about the pandemic, which you already talked about. And I wanted to mention, where do you see things going with podcasting in the future? And where do you see yourself in that future?
Yeah, awesome question. I see podcasting just simply continuing to grow. It's something that right now has such a big audience. But the fact is, if you interview 10 people, you know, you're still getting maybe like 4 out of 10 somewhere in there that are active listeners on a daily basis. And the numbers continue to grow. So every time I see that, that's why I'm kind of hesitate to even give numbers up. But it's a form of content that's on demand, like I said earlier, and people use it to learn. And you can do it while you multitask, while you're cooking dinner, while you're cutting grass, while you're working out. So I've had people tell me in the past when I started podcasting and kind of like, hey, do you listen? Or a lot of times it's like, oh, I'm just too busy to do that. And I'm like, if you drive your car to the store, you found 20 minutes. If you cut the grass and in the summertime do some kind of yard work or ride a bike, do something, you just found time. I got kids. I got this going on. Okay, well, when you're cooking them dinner, you can pop this in while they're watching, you know, a cartoon. So there's like so much opportunity for it. And then as far as growing, it's still a newer medium, even though it's been out over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like social media, where in like 2008, 2009, Facebook came out and it was for college students only. You needed the .edu email address. And then eventually, you know, now like my mom's on there and people have their grandparents on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could see how Facebook grew. I'm not trying to talk any politics about the Facebook or what you think, but the fact is it started there, and look at what it's at now. I feel like podcasting already is breaking through like that. Why I'm excited to be a part of it is the reason my why behind choosing podcasting is not only did I love it, and B, not only did I know that it was the demand was there. So those two things need to be a part of your vision of why you're going to do something. So do you love doing it? Is there demand in it? Yes. The third part of it is the why behind that, because I can love other things and I can see demand in other areas, but why podcasting is the thing, right? And it's because, A, I love storytelling, just like we talked about as a youngster with, you know, video and stuff like that and audio, is storytelling. But I love giving people an opportunity to connect with one another, just like how you and I connect today. Mm-hmm. And it's also a mean, like, I feel like as a medium, there's so much opportunity to get inspired on podcasting. Like, you can go and listen. There's so many great shows out there. So I feel like you can be, it's a great productivity tool. It's not just extra, noise. You know, I feel like some social media, you get in there and you're just like flipping through, like you go to Instagram and you're flipping through reels right now. And some of them are super creative and catchy and interesting well done. But you end up like you watch 30 of them in a row and you're like, man, I just burned like, you know, half hour of my time or whatever. And you think to yourself, what could have I done with a half hour if instead of just watching people do IG reels, I could have listened to an actual thoughtful podcast where there's storytelling. And that's how people connect. We care about your backstory or what you're doing. And then it's just a great way for people to be forward thinking. And so those are just some things that come off the top of my head. I know you sent me to, you know, kind of prepare for this interview, and I'm more off the cuff. Kind of where you wanted to go with the skeleton of the interview, but I just want you to know, and I'm being transparent with people tuning in that, like, most importantly is just, you know, I'm being real, and those are the actual reasons why I'm doing podcasting. It's not a soundbite. It's not a, oh, that's why he's doing this. You know, I love it. It's something that it has so much potential. And it's just, it's great. Do I think that everybody should be or could be or will be a podcaster? I'll answer those individually. Like, do I think everybody will be? No, I don't think so. Could they be? The answer there is yes, because it doesn't take the startup costs in a podcast are very minimal. But should they be? You know, no, I don't think that. Just like in social media, like everyone has AIDS, but not everyone's content creator. Some people just simply enjoy loving to be the consumer. Right. So, yeah, I don't think that everyone needs to have a show. If there's something in them, as I mentioned earlier, that you're called to do, if you're a fitness influencer and you feel called to educate people on your fitness and you're doing online videos and you think, hey, why don't I like interview some people like-minded and pick their brain on my show, it's a great branding tool. It's a huge branding tool. And the last thing I'll say is something that we're moving into is actually working more with the enterprise model, working with businesses to utilize podcasting as an internal communication tool. So think of the clunky company newsletter that comes out that's written by like the president, right? And there's some new policy and procedure that the whole 50,000 employees need to read and understand by tomorrow's meeting, and we got to talk about it. You got to like go through and read that email, and it's super long. Imagine if that company had a podcast for internal communication, and the president just did like a 5-minute speech with a quick, maybe like soundbite or something, a little bit more entertaining, well done. Then people can just listen to that. They can listen to it on their way into the office. They can listen to it on their lunch break or when they're on the clock, if they don't want to listen to business stuff, whatever. But it can be consumed and just be more forward thinking than the old clunky email. And then also, if it's an organization that has sales and service and information that you want your team to have, then that's a great way for them to get it. Like, wouldn't it be cool if you worked for a sales organization, like if you're working and selling insurance, in whatever company you're with, had a podcast and they interviewed Gary Vee.
Right.
And they spent whatever money they needed to get Gary Vee to do a 15-minute interview. And every week, every Friday, they did like a fun Friday and they had a different guest. And they can be an athlete, and the athlete could talk about how they persevered through their story and how salespeople can connect with and relate to that. So instead of dipping all of your money into that big corporate event that happens once a year, usually they send you out to somewhere nice, this company will drop like 50 grand, 100 grand on one weekend to get everybody to stay at this gorgeous resort. And it's awesome, and it's great team building. Excuse me. It's wonderful, but here's the scoop. It's one weekend. So by like Monday, Tuesday, when everyone's back home, that wears off. You know,
right.
The hit, that like energy hit is only a couple of days. Where if you had an episodic podcast where you can have multiple keynote speakers on instead of just having one person deliver like the Saturday night speech and then everyone gets rah rah, that's awesome. I'm saying you could still do that if you want, but I would, if you had to choose between the two, I'd find it more valuable if you had multiple guests on, did it through a podcast, and spent that extra money like on your employees, maybe putting it in their pocket or investing in better equipment for them and all kinds of stuff. I think people would appreciate that. And then maybe you do like a more lower means meeting at the end of the year. That's spending all this extra ritzy money. You can spend money marketing your podcast to your, you know. So I feel that's the direction we're going to start to see this really blowing up, is where businesses are using it now as branding tools, internal communications. I haven't heard too many other podcasters talk about doing that, but that's what our business is focused on.
Right.
And that's the direction we're looking to go.
That's amazing. So when it comes to podcasting, obviously it's growing, but it's going to be utilized in many different kind of new innovative ways. Particularly you mentioned, you see how it can be used in the workplace. And so, I totally believe that it's definitely going to be used in ways we haven't seen before. So absolutely. So I'm curious, and obviously you're going to kind of ride that trend, which is important for entrepreneurs to see what's down the pike and get in front of it or take advantage of it. I'm curious now, obviously, you know, I'm a big believer in networking. You talked earlier about how we met on LinkedIn. You had just reached out and messaged me and whatnot, and that's how it all started. And so I believe LinkedIn's a great platform for networking. I'm curious, when it comes to networking, it's so vital, particularly for entrepreneurs, so they, you know, they can get to a point where they maybe mostly or solely rely on referrals. And not just for entrepreneurs, but also people looking for jobs, job hunters. You know, networking is so vital. And I'm curious, what advice would you give to people when it comes to networking?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I appreciate you bringing that up. It's so true. Like, I would say the number one most important thing, be real. Be yourself. Like that, you know, if you go out to these networking events and you're trying to be fake or pretend you're 10 steps ahead, further ahead than you currently are, people are going to sniff that out and know that it's BS. Like I would say, go out, be real, share a little bit of your story. Cause that's like, if you have 3 minutes with someone in a cocktail hour kind of environment, like whether it's digital or in person, I just say the most important thing is who are you? Like, why do they care about doing business with you? You know, I'd say a big no-no, in my opinion, would be, take this for what it's worth, is over trying to just oversell right away. Like, you know, it's barely even the first date. Barely even the first date. So just kind of understand, you know, allow people to like who you are and what you're stand behind. And then if you notice, you know, the next step in the conversation leads into a little bit more about what you do. I know that's like an easy networking question. Mm-hmm. What do you do, right? But what you do should not be just like 10 minutes of spewing, you know, your services. It should really be like how you feel without knowing anything about who you're talking to. How can you then position your service to be a solution for that person or their network of people? So you got to like, I would say the number one thing is go there and make an attempt to do less talking and more listening. And then, you know, instead of walking away with 100 names and phone numbers, try to walk away with like 5 really good connections that you can follow up with.
Amazing. And thank you so much for that advice. I think it's so important for people to be real, be genuine, be authentic, and people like and respect you more. And it's all about people knowing, liking, and trusting you in terms of if they want to do business with you. I think that's so critical. And you also mentioned doing less talking and, you know, more listening. We have that, you know, that you know that saying, 2 ears, 1 mouth. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I was interviewing a guest called D. Scott Smith, and he wrote a book about networking, which is really great. And he calls himself a motivational listener, which is a
Nice play on the phrase. I believe I introduced him to you. If I haven't, I will.
You did, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, we haven't met yet, but I'm excited to meet him.
Oh, great. And so he has his own podcast along with his friend Russ Hedge, who I think I also introduced you to. I don't know if I have. If I haven't, I will. And I'm actually going to be on their show tomorrow, which is exciting. And so they, you know, he talks a lot about motivational listening. It's all about, you know, listening way more than you talk. And so, and he's an expert at this. He actually helps firms to get leads and to build business through networking as opposed to expensive marketing. So I think networking is so vital and so critical if people truly understand how to do it right. And I came up with this phrase, the more you network, the luckier you get. And it's so true.
It is true.
And it's a play on the whole, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get kind of thing, which is also correct. So definitely, you know, they found that the luckiest and most successful people actually have the widest and deepest networks. I think if you read the book Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi, he talks about this. And so an excellent book for anyone who wants to read it about networking. I'm curious, I guess that segues to my next question. What key book recommendations do you have for folks?
Yeah, so the one that always comes back to me, it's kind of like the Bible, business Bible for me, surprisingly, is Think and Grow Rich. Absolutely love it. The fact that it covers so much ground in that book by Napoleon Hill, and the fact that he interviewed, I forget what the number is, but it was like 100 or maybe even 500 different business people who are highly successful and influential individuals. And he picks their brain. It's kind of like, imagine if someone listened to 500 great podcasts and took notes and then wrote a book on it, on their findings. And what's really awesome about it is I got the original, like, 1937 version that they, like, re-released a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And so we're a little shy of 100 years later. And holy smokes, does that book hold up today? It's crazy. I mean, the ways, like, the societal examples given still work. Like, this is way before the internet, and a lot of the things talked about then can be applied today, networking being one of them.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's a book I've read years ago.
Core Growth,
right?
Yeah, so I would say Think and Grow Rich. I love Ed Milet. His show Maxed Out is fantastic, and he also wrote a book a couple of years ago called Maxed Out that I, at one point, he was giving away for, like, nothing on his website. So it's not why I grabbed it, but I loved him, and it was, like, a no-brainer. So read that book in, like, a day or two because it was so good. Highlighted the entire thing. And let me think, you know, a couple others that resonate with me. School of Greatness by Lewis House was a fantastic book. He's also got the podcast, School of Greatness. Power of Failure. I think the name of it by Fran Tarkenton is a great one, talking about the reason that he's successful is through all of his failures, kind of collectively, the fact that if you don't stop, you're not, you know, quote unquote a failure. You just continue and grow. So those are just kind of, you know, three or four books that come off the top of my head. I have a shelf of books that have either been gifted to me or are from podcast guests that I've, you know, started and stopped I'm getting back into, like, picking one and tackling it and moving on to the next instead of, like, kind of skimming through a few here and there. But absolutely, I just got off a call previously to this. I'm going to check my notes real quick. I wrote it down. It was a quote that she learned from her father. And the quote is, you'll be the same person you are in 5 years that you are today, except for two things. Based on the books you read and the connections you make. That's exactly what you just said. What books am I reading and how am I making connections, which is social media, connecting, and also networking. So I agree with that. If you're not happy with where you're at today, don't be surprised if you're pretty much in the same boat if you're not putting new content into yourself. Now, he said books. That's a little bit of a dated quote. That could be books and podcasts or books and YouTube videos. You know, content, basically. Positive content plus your connections is going to move you forward. So if someone doesn't love reading books, you can listen to them now, or you can go and, find other, like, listen to podcasts in the same space. But there's definitely something in reading the book where it's concise and it's not just conversational. A lot of podcasts, they're more storytelling and conversations. But if you're really looking to, like, learn bullet-pointed lessons, obviously if someone has a book out, go read their book and then listen to their show, like I did for Ed and like I did for Lewis. And something I want to share is I plan on writing a book in the near future summarizing everything that was learned through my multiple guests on Mic'd Up. I think episode 100 is in the you know, planning stages. I mean, right now I got 84 out. I recorded the 85th episode this morning. And so I know I'm on the way to 100. So I don't know if the book will come out like that soon or not. But what I would love to do is summarize each episode in like a couple pages so then people can get lessons from 100 incredible people in one concise book. And that would just be like a quick read that, you know, if you don't have the time to listen to 80 or in this case 100 episodes, fine, but you should have no problem zipping through a quick read where you learn the lessons instead of an hour-long interview. You can get the bullet point version. Kind of like Chicken Soup for the Soul. I've never read that book. People say it's similar to that, where it's kind of like collective ideas put together.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I can't wait when that book comes out. When it comes out, let me know. I'll be the first person online to buy it.
Definitely. You'll know about it for sure.
Great.
Yeah.
Definitely, we'll take a look at that book. Maybe you're giving me an idea to do that at some point. I've thought about this as well. Maybe doing an episode just me talking about what I've learned as well. And perhaps you could do that as well. That would be an amazing episode. So that was actually going to be my next question. If you were going to write a book yourself, I'm glad to know that you will. In fact, if you did an autobiography, I think that would be great. Great book idea. Great. I'd buy that too. Of course.
I'm still telling that story every day, man. And that's the last thing I'll say too, like to summarize it all is, you know, I do believe that we're all the protagonists in our own story. Right. So we talked about that 10 by 10 piece of land, right?
Mm.
Like I was trying to water the forest. I'm going to call it my plot of land. Well, guess what? It's actually two meanings. Pick your plot doesn't just mean pick your plot of land. It means you get to write your own story. You get to be who you want to be. So go and do it. Like, stop complaining about how the pages are turning out. If you're not happy with it, you get back in control of your own story and write the best damn version you can, because most of us are in control of a lot more than we give ourselves credit for. And I love to see more people writing their story and being the version of themselves that when they're looking back on it, the version they wish they were and the version that they actually are twins looking in the mirror.
Wow. That's amazing. And I love that analogy with the mirror and the twins and obviously being a protagonist in your own story. You know, Joe Rogan, who's the number one guy in our field, podcasting, he says that you have to be the star of your own movie, Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally agree with him. And it goes back to what you just said earlier, being the protagonist in your own story. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Rogan obviously is a major star in his own film. He's got signed a $100 million deal with Spotify, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
so he sets the bar pretty high as far as the podcasting goes. So, amazing success he's had when it comes to podcasting. And I don't often watch his show, but I do believe it's a good quality show. I don't agree with everything he says, but definitely I think it's a show. The Joe Rogan Experience, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
And whatnot.
I don't think it'd be healthy if you agreed with everything that everyone says all the time.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, that's a fanboy instead of someone that, I know what you're saying. No, I've enjoyed some of his segments. Usually I'll pick a topic that I'm interested in and then kind of go from there on it, because I know he's got several hundred episodes, like 1,500 or 2,000 episodes out. So
right.
There's a lot to dive in with his show. So, I usually pick kind of an area of interest and I'll go that way.
definitely. And my understanding is all his episodes are obviously 3 hours long, right? So.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's.
Well, then break it into micro content. Like on YouTube, you'll see that everything's like a 5 or 10 minute clip. And then from there, obviously, they say, check us out on Spotify and you can listen to the whole episode. I do the same thing. Micro content is super important, just to kind of go off on this tangent.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing a podcast, the number one thing I can tell you is stop assuming and trying to get people to listen to the full version of your show. Because it would be equivalent to us making a movie, talking about being the movie, the star in your own movie. But we would never write a screenplay, produce the whole movie, and say it's going to come out on whatever, Thanksgiving Day or whatever it is, the big release, without promoting it. So, like when people throw their full-length video up on YouTube and or Apple Podcasts or Spotify and they expect someone to listen to the whole hour, they don't even know what they're going there to experience. So what you'd want to do is, if it's audio only like your show, is, as I'm sure you're aware, is you do like a 30-second or 60-second soundbite, and, you know, use software to get that looking and sounding good, you know, with the cover art and everything. And then people can consume it in a way where now they're hooked in and they can decide, hey, I want more of that. And then where do you click on or work through the call to action to get to the full episode? So now you got someone interested. Like, I wouldn't want to just show up at a movie theater, sit down and hope that I like what's going to be shown to me. But if I'm scrolling through Instagram and all of a sudden the 30-second teaser trailer or 2-minute teaser trailer is there and I love it and it looks really good, then I'm going to, you know, talk to my friends and family and say, hey, this movie looks pretty cool. What do you think about going to see it next Friday? Right. And whatever. Now you got something, you got someone engaged, and the consumer is ready to do it at their speed and where they choose to listen. So that's, I'd say, the biggest problem. People come to me, they're like, I want to learn how to monetize my show. And then I look, and they're just, like, recording it and throwing it up, and with no, very little effort or micro content at all. It's just, you know, they're just expecting people to find it. And so that's what I'd like to say about micro content, is it's super, super important.
Wow. And yeah, you know, it's interesting. I went on a website called headliner.app. You may have heard of it, right? And
Yeah.
And I made what were called these audiograms. They were like a minute long. And I thought these were like so cool and whatnot. And so obviously there's more to it than going there and whatnot. And you're someone who helps people. My understanding, you help a lot of podcasters to improve, or if they're about to start a podcast, how to do it right, which is, and you do it at a very affordable price, which is amazing, of course.
Correct. Yeah.
So
we do the video promos and the audio promos for someone. So not only do we produce your full audio or video show, we distribute it for you, the intro, outros, type, put in your promo ads or the middle of it, whatever, if it's mid-roll. And then we also create that micro content. So if it's audio only, we'll do the audio items. If it's video, we'll pick the hottest, you know, 30 seconds to 2 minutes that are going to really hook someone in, and just let them know, like, this is the value that this stuff will provide. And if they want more of it, click here, and then give you the options to tune in on all these audio platforms or the full length on YouTube. And it's really the best way to do it. You know, just to give us a little shameless plug here is you can check Social Chameleon out at socialchameleon.us. That's how CMELEON.us. So all together, socialchameleon.us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And just so you know, that information will be provided in the episode description area so people can see it and read it there. They can go on that site to reach out and, I guess, connect with you and definitely find out more about what you and the firm can do for individuals or whatnot, which is amazing. So I'm curious, I'm wondering, what key advice would you give to someone who, you know, who says, hey, you know, what Mike's doing is real cool. You know, I want to be a podcaster. I want to get into that. Well, what would you tell them? What should they do?
Cool. So I just want to say one thing, too, real quick, just a side note is
sure.
You have a hard stop. In 2 minutes, I have someone who's waiting for me on a call.
Okay.
But
all right.
your question is who, you know, what would I tell someone who says they want to start a show right now, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Number one thing I would ask them is why. Like, why are you doing it? Are you doing it just because it seems to be the cool thing to do and kind of keep up with the Joneses? Or is it like in my situation, I felt the heart tug. Like, what purpose is it going to serve? Because what the world doesn't need is just someone else who's doing it. What the world does need is someone who's passion-led and driven to do something that's actually serving their audience. If you're doing it from a place of serving your audience, whoever that is, whoever that then absolutely I will high-five you and help you out. I'll train you how to do it. You know, I'll teach you the way. I definitely am encouraged when I hear people who want to start the show, but I would just simply say, why are you doing it?
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And I want to thank you for being a guest on the show. I want to thank the audience for listening. I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Thank you so much, Mike.
Yeah.
Definitely would love to have you on at some point in the future. You got it.
Yeah.
And definitely everyone have a wonderful day. Take care.
Thanks, Luke. Appreciate you having me on that. Thank you.
Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that'd be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.